And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I think you have to agree that what happened this week was we had a week of Trump temper tantrums. I hate to say it that way because it makes it seem like this man who is an adult in full possession of his faculties is actually a child. He's not a child. He knows what he's doing. He has a plan. His plan is awful. His aim is awful. What he wants to arrive at is awful for the American people. But it comes off looking like a temper tantrum. And we've had it.
Well, what he can't have, he seeks to deprive others of having or to destroy.
Yeah, that's right. But this week, he managed to make sure that 11 million people will lose their unemployment insurance. That's many of them family members. That another 3 million self-employed gig workers will lose their unemployment insurance, and that 11 million plus people will be threatened with immediate eviction. That's pretty right. Good for a week's work.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And all because he doesn't want to sign the bill that he himself and his people proposed and negotiated the terms of. That's what it comes down to. He said, do this, and I'll be happy. So they did this, and he said, well, I'm not going to do it. Right?
That's it. And also, he's going to deprive the military of their pay.
Well, he vetoed that. He vetoed the defense bill. He didn't sign the relief bill. He didn't sign the bill to keep the government open.
Right.
But he vetoed the defense bill. Now, if you're in power to maintain the American capitalist system, how do you do that? How do you do that by not having money allocated to the army or to the functioning of the government, whose functions are to maintain the American capitalist system? I don't get it. How does that endear you to the National Association of Manufacturers? I really don't get it. You don't seem to get it either.
The bigger picture is how it endears himself to the 74, 75 million people who voted for him. That's the trick.
That's true, and that's right. And they don't know what he's doing. They haven't the slightest idea what it means that he vetoed the defense bill or that he vetoed the relief bill. Most of them don't believe that there's a coronavirus epidemic. Most of them don't think that there are, in fact, 330,000 dead as a result of COVID-19.
Well, they just think what they believe in is reality.
That's right.
Whether it's there or not.
That's right.
That's what's dangerous. That's what's dangerous. And that they don't care. And that they're what has happened, of course, is that we've destroyed the notion of e pluribus unum, that we're not pulling together, we're not trying to pull together, we're pulling in essentially two different directions, and the in between we have this constitutional mechanism that decides or provides as to how we're supposed to resolve these differences. And that's being undermined in so many ways.
Well, pinpoint the ways.
Well, first of all, we have the electoral issue. That's how we decide which persons or which policies the people prefer. And so what was decided in November was that Donald Trump would be tossed out. We would be going with Joe Biden and essentially the Democratic ideas there. And that election has been challenged. It was actually, they were challenging that before it started. We had this, that our listeners have heard me say for years now, this Republican conceit that only they should be able to run the government, and only their ideas should be able to be enacted. So we have that, and all these attempts to undermine the judiciary, to attack any the judges who don't agree with them. I mean, the judiciary is essentially what stood between the will of the people being enforced and Trump being willing to being enabled to override that. All these lawsuits went essentially nowhere. We've had that. We've had the corruption of the legislatures, where Trump has tried to get around those things. Although we did find out that in the election, the Republicans were more successful than the Democrats in the legislative elections, both on a state level and on a congressional level. So we had that. We're continuing to have these challenges to the process of constitutional turning over the government to the winner of the election.
But that's normal. I mean, if you don't think that the other side has the right to govern, no matter how many votes they get, why would you let them govern? Why would you bother to meet with them to tell them what they're supposed to do or what the problems are? So it's completely natural that the trade representative's office won't meet with the new trade representative, or that the Defense Department secretary and those people won't meet with the incoming defense secretary, or and down the line, right? Why should they meet with them? Yeah.
Yeah. And continuing to try to stack the government or to enact procedures that will stymie the new government from working, or working in the way that they intend and want to work. We're having that. You know, in some ways it's normal. I mean, Trump's been filling positions on boards and commissions that he has the right to do that with his loyalists, so to speak. Some of them are fairly minor, but we've seen what happens when his people get in there. One of the things that really has been destroyed over these months, and it had to do with the election, was the postal system. I don't know what you're seeing, but I know in our office...
Not seeing my mail.
Yeah, well, that's basically it. In our office, the amount of mail that we normally get has been seriously curtailed. You hear stories about packages piling up. I know for a fact, because I had sent for something and it was being tracked by the sender, that for 3 weeks I've had something that's hasn't moved from some postal office somewhere. My vendor called me or sent me an email and said, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to keep tracking this, cancel your order, or send you an electronic proof of this? It's kind of unbelievable. We have people that we get cards from every year and nothing has shown up. And I don't know if our cards to them have gotten through. This dismantling, the post office is one of the great institutions of America. Predates the founding of the Republic, the Constitutional Republic. Ben Franklin and all that stuff. So, I mean, we've had that, but just the questioning of government and what have you. And the people are digging in, and people are digging in more and more and more. They're turning away from anybody who can explain to them why this is bad. They're going to all these news sites. They're siloing even more. They're rejecting rationality, and we'll see what happens. I mean, and some of these people, of course, are are going to Congress. they go to Congress to bollocks things up.
But let's face it, Biden's got to come up with a very public, very well-messaged program immediately to reverse the evictions, to produce affordable housing, to raise wages throughout the country, to do all the things that the people who are suffering need done so that we can have a new atmosphere in the country. We can't have the atmosphere that Trump has fostered, that the Rush Limbaughs have fostered, that government is your enemy, that poor people are your enemy, that immigrants are your enemy. We have to tackle the real enemy, and we have to tackle the real conditions. If that would happen, if there would be a clear program, a program enunciated cleverly and clearly from all sides, that would change public opinion. That would change this drift towards suicide that the Trumps and the GOPs and the Limbaughs and the right wing generally have fostered over the last 4 years and have managed to get a sizable minority of the population to go along with.
Well, it's not the last 4 years. This has been in the works for decades.
Right, but Trump was the
Rush Limbaugh,
master
this
conductor.
Week he signed the air for the
Trump did it better than the rest of them.
The groundwork was laid by guys.
The groundwork was laid.
It was laid by guys.
Yeah, but you know, the Koch brothers were never able to succeed, but Trump got them to succeed. They needed a guy like Trump, right?
Yeah, they needed a guy like Trump, but again, he built, or he came on what was built before him by the Rush Limbaughs of the world, by Newt Gingrich and his politics of personal destruction and tear the whole house down. Bannonism, same way. This type of thing. And I agree with you. There are a lot of analyses going around. The parties, in many ways, have switched from what they had been in years past. The Republican Party, of course, going back to the Civil War, was the war of civil rights and of championing the black people, the African Americans, and the Democratic Party was the party of slavery and Jim Crow, at least down south part of it was. And of course, starting in the mid 1960s, that reversed. Since Reagan and Reaganism, what happened is the Working Man's Party, which was the Democratic Party, the coalition that FDR put together, and in some ways was built on Teddy Roosevelt's ideas about breaking up big business. That, you know, as someone said, the Democrats used to be the shot and the beer party, and the Republicans were the champagne and country club party. And over the last several decades, the Democrats have been looked upon as being the elitist party, the people who are, you know, more highly educated and are at least perceived as looking down on what was it Hillary said, the deplorables, or the book, the Hillbilly Elegy book, you know, the folks in West Virginia. I mean, there was a time West Virginia was probably the most Democratic state in the Union, and now it's one of, if not the most Republican state. And you've got people there who are poor and uneducated and working and having a hard time, you know, have high unemployment, and they keep, and they've cast their ballots with the GOP. And the breaking through is going to be very, very difficult.
Well, you can't. It's not merely that the GOP succeeded in doing what it wanted to do. It succeeded in capitalizing on what the Democrats gave up. Because once the Democrats followed the third wave approach that Clinton, was the great standard bearer of, once they abandoned explicitly working class demands in favor of meritocracy in education, in other words, in favor of a middle class view, at that point they left the field open for the demagogues of the Republican Party, the demagogues of the type of Richard Nixon, to pursue their racist so-called Southern strategy and win over a large section of the white working class, because the Democrats abandoned advocacy for working class issues. It's just that simple. That's what happened.
Yeah, they, I think they needed that third wave in order to even win the election. And they certainly...
Yeah, but you don't give up your base in order to get the low-hanging fruit on the other side. You build on your base. They gave up their base.
Well, yeah, they didn't build... they didn't do... Once they got into power, they didn't follow through enough on their... on that.
And, what they never seemed to realize was that if you let, if you're a Democrat of the New Deal, of the New Deal Democrats, not of the prior New Deal Democrats, not of the Dixie, you know, of the slavocracy Democrats, but after Roosevelt, if you're a Democrat and you don't make sure that the union movement is strong and functioning, you're undercutting your base, your electoral possibilities. And that's exactly what happened.
You know, you're describing it probably more of a Truman-based party. He, you know, in what he was trying to do to protect and to advance what Roosevelt had done, pro-union, and he knew who his people were. Of course, he lost control of the Congress in '46, so he had a problem there. That's where you get Taft-Hartley and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there were things. You mentioned the post. We mentioned post office. There's a big union there. And the Republicans were successful in getting a bill passed that really undercut the ability of the post office to function. It's burdened it with all of these requirements that they have to pay 75 years in advance for the pensions. And, you know, when Obama took office, they never undid that. They never undid that. He got so concentrated on that health care that he never did something like that that should have been done and could have been done. Biden has talked about doing it. We'd hope he would do that.
Well, Trump now has introduced rules. He didn't have to go to the Congress for this. He could do this, and he could do this, and he did do this on his own. That sets up a whole new category of federal worker, into which they have now categorized nearly 80% of the federal workforce, which allows the federal government managers to fire any federal worker they want to for any reason they want to, which undercuts all the union contracts. Which means that the last bastion of union strength in the country, which is government workers, fundamentally has been dissolved, unless the unions can figure out something to do about this, or unless Biden changes those rules.
Yeah,
nobody's talking about that.
No, that should be one of his priorities.
Yeah,
that should be one of his priorities on those rules with the unionized workers. He has talked about making government contracts, and I always thought there was a law about this. Tom Hartman talks about it all the time, that the government's got to buy American. And that would make a difference instead of outsourcing its purchases to overseas. That would make a difference, but even
if
he does
it... difference. It's not going to make the difference.
No, but it makes a difference.
A difference, that's right.
And what he's got to do is, when he does it, make sure the people know that he's done it.
Well,
that's the other thing.
There you have it.
The Democrats don't let people know what they've done for them.
What I couldn't understand in the negotiations with Mnuchin over the relief bill was why the Democrats did not give daily briefings about their positions and where the negotiations were and what Mnuchin and the other Republicans were objecting to. Why didn't they do that in order to rally the support of working people behind them? Instead, it was all done secretly, and all of a sudden you come up with a plan which everybody admits is not a good enough plan, which the president in the end won't sign anyway, and which he then criticizes for being not good enough. So he gets the credit for demanding the $2,000, whereas Pelosi and the Democrats should have been getting the credit for 6 months, but
that's
it didn't happen.
Right. For 6 months, they should have been blasting Mitch McConnell every day.
Where is it to the benefit of the working people or of the Democrats to keep this secret? I don't get it.
Well, that's part of the problem. They're the party of legislation, but they don't understand the marketing of it. They know the process. They just don't know how to take advantage of what they've done. And the Republicans are masters of undermining things and touting what they've done or what they've stopped.
Yeah, and hiding what they don't want you to know.
Right.
I mean, this fellow, Trump, has managed to go 4 years and he hasn't yet revealed anything about his taxes. Now, my guess is that there's nothing to know. But it doesn't matter whether there is something to know or there isn't anything to know. The Democrats asked for it. It was something that was traditionally done by all these people who ran for president. He managed to stonewall it for 4 years, and you're no closer to it than you were when he started out. It's interesting. They are masters at hiding the truth and promoting the falsehoods.
Yeah.
And by the way, the teacher of all of them, Rush Limbaugh, has shuffled off into the darkness, hasn't he? He's done. He's gone.
Yeah, he ended his run this week, and you know, he changed America. He's one of those handful of people that had a significant change without being necessarily an elected official. And he had help from certain elected officials. I think when you write about the books written entitled "The 100 People That Screwed Up America" or whatever, Rush Limbaugh is in, you know, he's in the top 10, if not in the top 5. And he, again, I think he laid the groundwork a lot for Donald Trump, because his audience was older white men, primarily without a college education. That was his grouping.
You know, his style was constantly to be aggrieved, constantly to be annoyed, constantly to attack, and constantly to make things up.
Yeah.
I mean, he very rarely told the truth. In fact, his version of the world was so at odds with what everybody else's version was that he was able to tell people, don't believe these others. Believe me. And people would listen to him and say, well, Jesus, if he's right, they must be wrong, because he's saying everything different than they.
Right. And the other thing is, whatever he was saying went unanswered.
That's it.
The Democrats had no answer to him. There was no liberal Rush Limbaugh on the air.
Well, the closest is Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman is probably the closest.
Yeah. And when I say closest, I mean in terms of audience size.
Yeah. Yeah. But as in terms of persona, Tom Hartman isn't in the same.
No, Hartman is a nobody compared to Rush Limbaugh on the public scene.
Yeah, the one persona was Al Franken, but
he was only on the air for a year and a half, or 2 years the most.
Right,
and then he went into Congress.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, I don't know if you ever listened to his show. It was not the kind of show that Rush Limbaugh produced. It was not a show. That was so hard-hitting, so ideological, so didactic. It just wasn't.
No. That whole Air America pretty much failed. It went bankrupt a couple of times. They tried to be the answer, but it didn't really work. Only a couple people came out of that that were on that.
But anyway, the thing about Rush Limbaugh also is that he was the beneficiary of a lot of liberal support. You may laugh at this, but Rush Limbaugh appeared on 300 stations, but his bedrock stations was a network owned by a Pennsylvania businessman based in Philadelphia. Up here in the Scranton area, WILK, was where he was, I think. And this businessman owns, I think, 70 or did own about 70 radio stations, and their playlist was Limbaugh, Hannity, and Glenn Beck. That was Glenn the Beck. Basic lineup on all of their stations. This guy was the biggest donor in Pennsylvania to the Obama campaign. Now, how is it possible that you can go to bed at night thinking of yourself as a liberal Democrat, which this guy does think of himself as, and you made all your money promoting fascism? And you didn't do it for 6 months. You did it for 30 years. That's a hell of a story, right?
It is. It is. And I don't think there's really a good way of explaining that. I don't think there's really a good way of explaining that.
No. There's a way to explain it, but it doesn't look good for the guy.
Yeah. Like I said, not a good way.
Right.
But
Rush Limbaugh was the American practitioner of the Goebbels playbook, the big lie. And he did it effectively. He did it well. And even if his audience wasn't as big as he claimed it was big enough.
Yeah. And in key spots, it was enough.
Yeah.
One other thing, because it's an extension of this, was that happened this week, where we're seeing the Trump pardons. And part of that is against the intent of the Constitution was not to allow the president to free and pardon rogues and people that were really bad people. It was people that maybe there was injustice done. But they were able, and he's been able to package the reason for these pardons the same way he's packaged everything else, that these people really were picked on, that they weren't really guilty. Roger Stone and Paul Manafort, and he's already pardoned Mike Flynn.
Papadopoulos.
And then his supporters, the guy, his first two congressional supporters, Collins and the guy from California, Duncan Hunter.
Duncan Hunter, a thief, and a guy who abused his wife and blamed her for stealing the money.
Yeah.
And Collins, who was a stock, who traded on stolen information.
Right. Right. And
don't forget Joe Arpaio.
Joe Arpaio has been previously. He threw in a couple of other guys that Rob Blagojevich.
Yes.
Remember the from The Apprentice. But he also pardoned those four Blackwater murderers because
They're war criminals.
This appealed to his
base.
They're
more than murderers. They're war criminals.
They're war criminals.
Yeah.
They're war criminals.
And that, by the way, is a foreign policy blot that it's going to be very hard for Biden to overcome. People throughout the world, don't forget, we have, 400 military bases everywhere. And people throughout the world know about the pardoning of these war criminals. If people like that get pardoned, who wants you for an ally?
Well, this week, the Pakistani court freed the last guy that murdered Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter.
Daniel Pearl, yeah.
Daniel Pearl.
Yeah.
Who are we to say now? After what Trump did.
You have nothing to say. Well, we have another week of Trump tantrums coming up. See what he does.
Yes.
Then we have the showdown he's looking for, right? January 5th.
Yep. And we have the new year. We have the end of this.
We have the end of this year. Let's look back on it when we meet next week. We're done with this year. Almost.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.